now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Thomas.
And I'm Natalie. And today on the show we catch up with Stuart Milk because it's so close to Harvey Milk Day.
And speaking of catching up, it was Ida Hobbit Day recently and we've got a report on that too. So all that and more on its way in the next hour. Hello, Steph. Hello, Natalie.
Good evening.
How are we all?
I have a dongly floppy one next to me. And no cover either.
Yeah, so it's just a bit of a flawed microphone, isn't it?
So yeah, someone's abused that microphone. We'll have to fix it at some point.
It looks anorexic with like the fluffy bit round it.
But it's to stop you kind of like doing that thing into it. You take it off, yeah. See?
Ooh, you're good at that. You've practiced that.
You've got nice lips when you do that.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, we shouldn't say that.
The action that he made was like playing a bugle or a trumpet, I think.
It was good lip action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. He's lost for words.
I am not reacting to the innuendo. Steph's here, and I got told off because I was told I was really horrible to you.
You were horrible to me. But it was a good cover, I thought. Carl will never suspect a thing, man, no. Andy. And we can elope the weekend.
So what's our hashtag this week?
Hashtag Carl will make up the hashtag.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it'd start, can't believe Steph said that.
That was what it was, wasn't it? Stay as hashtag, I can't believe Steph said that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Steph, you do come out with them.
Thanks.
You know, or should it be hashtag OMG Natalie, not you too?
Yes, hey, see?
I'm trying to behave here.
Oh, talking of Harvey Milk, did you see Levi's have come out with a fashion line?
No.
Yeah, they got T-shirts the lot with a milk bottle on with Harvey Milk Day wrote on the front.
Fab.
Yes.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, they've been tweeting it all day. Yeah, so very fashionable. So go to Levi's website, I guess, if you want a Harvey Milk top.
Stuart Mill was lovely. He was here back in February for LGBT History Month. We met him. It was fantastic. Nice tattoo.
Yeah, so. And Ivan's rugby tackled him again for today.
Yeah, pulled our Lady Mayor up on saying that we've got very good tolerance here in Bristol. And he turned around and he said, no offence to your Lady Mayoress, but tolerance isn't enough. Which is very interesting.
It's very correct, actually.
Yeah, it is very correct.
When you look at the word, what that means, it is correct.
Yeah, I don't think she meant any offence by it. Mm.
Did you hear Pat Hart's piece on BBC Radio 2, the Jeremy Vine show?
No.
The other day, yeah, Pat did a piece about Bristol, because Jeremy Vine's show was actually done
from
in Bristol.
Null.
Yeah, that's it, Matt, yeah. And that was a very good piece he did on the integration of Bristol.
So for those of you not listening on our home station of BCFM, Pat Hart is our station manager and also does the
BCFM BBC Radio Bristol stuff
and also does a very good cooking programme on television.
Yeah, all right, we don't need his CV. I'm just pointing out who he is.
Yeah, he's prolific, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, he can talk for England himself, you know what he's like. So. Doesn't need us bigging him up.
It's true,
Pride's on its way.
Yeah, getting exciting.
About 6 weeks away, I think. Oh, yeah. So they've announced. Have you seen Lisa
Stansfield?
Stansfield,
yeah, headlining.
Yeah,
yeah. I did all the stuff. I did a whole rundown of Pride on Monday.
Oh, did you?
As it gets closer, and of course the exciting thing is we will be broadcasting live from the side of the stage on BCFM through, and it'll be the Shout Out crew all day.
As always, we take over for the day. It's very nice of BCFM to let us do it, actually. So I haven't heard if any of our other stations are taking
Pirate Nation
well.
Said they might, so I'll sort that with them.
But if you're listening on Glastonbury FM or Froome FM, we'll confirm with them.
But
if not, you can always listen online at shoutoutradio.lgbt. for the day.
And as we mentioned in Pride, you know, okay, it's free, you know, but they do want donations, but yeah. Go and buy a wristband. Really support it. Yeah. Show that
well, it's only a fiver, but they're going to ask for £3 on the gates.
Oh, are they?
They're going to ask. It's not compulsory, but they're going to ask for £3. But for £5, you're going to get discounts and free bus travel. So why would you not?
With the band, you get the drinks and food inside are cheaper.
Yeah.
And also, if you buy it in advance, you can travel anywhere in Zone 1 on first bus for free for the day.
That's it, which goes out to the burbs.
It goes for miles out. Yeah. It goes all the way up
goes
to, like,
out to Bradley Stoke.
And when
you think a single ticket's like £3.50 for the bus.
Well, if you get a day rider, it's like £4, isn't it? So it's like a quid more for your ticket.
Yeah.
Well, and you think of the headliners and the acts that we've got, you know, and if you go for the 15, you get free access to the three evening parties, the main one being Illumination and Bright Light.
I think there's a whole day and night support of wristband as well, isn't there? Which
there is.
Just get a day one if you want.
Yeah, the £15 one gives you the night one, but then there's a VIP one, which is 30, 35
quid.
£35. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I've been looking at that one.
Have you? I bet you have. Why do you need that? You're going to be by the side of the stage anyway.
Anyway, we're getting so busy talking about Pride. We're overrunning into your... In fact, we're several minutes already into your bit.
Oh, okay.
So shall
we
start then?
Okay.
So, Outshout, which is our pick of the best events coming up in the next week or two. And this week with the lovely Steffi. So, what have we got this week?
I guess we've just spoke about a lot of events, haven't we? As in, we spoke about Pride.
We spoke about the Pride, yeah. Yeah, but it's Pride season, isn't it? So
The Gym Palace, Old Market. Mm-hmm. That's tomorrow night from 10 p.m. to 4 in the morning. Starring Wilma Fingadoo. I hope I haven't said something really wrong there. Sorry, I have no idea what that means.
I'm getting used to it judging Drag Idol. Oh, it's another event on tonight.
That's right, the finals, and you're doing it. Yes. How's it going?
Yeah, it's really good. There's going to be a bit of a surprise in tonight. I can't say any more than that.
Okay.
But it's the final of the heats for this region.
Yeah.
Tonight, from about 9:30 onwards, it'll be going on. So come down. It's at the Queen Shilling here in Bristol on Frogmore Street.
I'm trying to look at you through my reading glasses, and you're quite blue. Okay now.
It's all right. I'm not a drag queen. You're fine. Just me.
Yeah, but I thought I was going to be the surprise.
No.
You're not dragging up.
No.
Hey, I'm going to say that vehemently. You just hurt every drag person's feelings.
It's just not me. I love drag queens, but it's not me.
Okay.
I'm not a drag queen.
Right, Indigo have got a special event. That's on the 1st of June from 8 o'clock to 11
yes,
o'clock.
New venue.
That's
and they're
their
in the
new
same
venue.
One as menu. Members.
Yeah, and we had members on the other evening.
What's the name of the club?
The Square Club.
Square Club, that's
it. 15 Barclay Square, and if you want the postcode, got a pen, hurry up, come on, get a pen. BS81HB. That's BS81HB.
I'm sure knowing you, it's on our website.
Probably. It will be in a minute. Unless Mayor has put it on there already. Want to know more about lesbian LBT plus women in the Southwest? Social networking group Indigo hosts their quarterly speed meet this June, in fact, June the 1st, at the Square Club. So they've been closed down, haven't they? Their usual event on Park Street.
Yeah, well, they were at Goldbrick House. Yeah, so yeah. If you were regular at Members or at Indigo, they have both moved to the Square Club. So details on the respective websites and obviously on ours as well. So.
Right, now the speed meet doesn't go all evening, it just runs from 8 until 9. So
when the Prosecco runs out, basically.
Exactly. They just ask that you arrive on time. After 9 p.m, they run the usual social with a private bar. And that's Indigo, that's the new one. So don't forget that, put the Square Club... in your diary.
Cool. Now, a message to those of you holding events. You can post them on Shoutout's website for free, and it does feed into the team here that do Outshout, like Steph and I. Just go to shoutoutradio.lgbt/events, and you'll see a button there that says, want to add your event? Click here, and you can click on it, and it comes through to the team. So.
And I'll be back in 3 weeks.
Yes. You're going off somewhere sunny, aren't you?
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much, Steph.
A boomerang and it doesn't come back, it's a stick.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's called Home. I think you pronounce it Doton is the name of the group. It's Dotan.
I take your word for it. I'm not going to try.
Yeah, Doton. Well, Doton doesn't sound right. It'd be double T, wouldn't it, for Doton, yeah. I think. So Terry's the expert on language. Dotan. Doton?
Doton.
You say?
I'd say Doton. Yeah. Yes.
I'd say Doton. Otherwise, yeah. It sounds like .com.
Otherwise, it sounds like .cotton.
So,
.com from EastEnders.
That song's called Home. So.
That's nice. That was a nice piece of music.
Yeah, lovely piece of music, that one. So, now, in 1978, Harvey Milk, who was the first openly gay man to be elected to public office in California, was assassinated. May the 22nd is recognised there as basically Harvey Milk Day, and that's kind of been going since 2009. And in February, Ivan managed to interview Harvey's nephew Stuart about some of the memories of his uncle and the work that the foundation does that bears his name. Have a listen to this.
I'm here today with Stuart Milk, and he's the co-founder of the Harvey Milk Foundation. He's also an LGBT activist and the nephew of the late Harvey Milk. Now, Stuart's uncle Harvey was the first openly gay elected public official in the state of California, but he was assassinated in 1978 after only a relatively brief tenure in office, along with the city mayor, George Moscone. Stuart, before we go on to the subject of the foundation and what that's all about, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your Uncle Harvey. And it wasn't obvious at first that he would turn out to be this great visionary that he did turn out to be, was it? Because he was actually quite conservative in the younger part of his life.
Well, yes and no. I mean, he grew up in a time of relative conservatism. Harvey was a challenger, and he, you know, even some of the individuals that I've met from his high school talked about him challenging some existing norms. And when he went to Albany State Teachers College, SUNY, State University of New York, Albany is what it's called now, it's actually one of their most famous alumni. So they did a big event, brought me in for that, and gave me a book of his column in the newspaper. It was shut down twice, and he renamed it and came back. For once, it was a teacher's college, and ROTC was there, and he said, how dare ROTC be there, you know, recruiting people for the military at a teacher's college. Although he was filled with some contradictions. So after he left college, he did himself become a commissioned officer in the Navy. So but that was Harvey. He spent more time when I was younger in theater in New York, and he was a protege of Tom O'Harrigan and Andrew Lloyd Webber, so there's a British connection there. He was a producer of Jesus Christ Superstar and Lenny and Hair on Broadway. He had long hair, and he kind of lived a bohemian lifestyle for a while, and this was well before he moved to San Francisco.
So he had a real musical theater connection then going on there as well.
Yes, and an intersection with me. You know, so right before he moved to San Francisco, Jesus Christ Superstar opened on Broadway. I was 12 years old, and he brought me to the opening, myself and my mother, actually, and growing up in the New York area, I was taken to see Carmen, taken to see this and that, but nothing like Jesus Christ Superstar. And so after the premiere, he said, well, do you want to go backstage and meet Jesus Christ? Do you want to meet Mary Magdalene? And I said, no, I want to meet King Herod. Now, if you remember anything about Jesus Christ Superstar, King Herod was in drag. And and so he looked at me like with an aha moment. And that actually began a long and intimate conversation with my uncle that lasted until he was assassinated.
So you basically outed yourself over King Herod.
Apparently, although he never actually brought that up with me. He did tell all of his friends in San Francisco that I was was gay, but he never once went there with me, but always had a conversation with me about myself being authentic. And I always talked about how different I felt. And he always said, well, those differences is something that you hold on to. Don't you give those up.
What prompted him to go into politics? Because he was like a dog with a bone for that, you know, for that position that he was going for, wasn't he? I think he tried, it was fourth occasion he finally got elected. Was that right?
Yeah, although he, it wasn't always the Board of Supervisors. He ran once for the State Assembly. In my conversations with him, and let's just put it this way. I was a teenager when he was running for public office, and the headlines of the New York Times would be, "Avowed homosexual runs again." Now, when he started running, it was illegal to be gay in California, and it was still a mental illness classified by the Psychiatric and Psychological Association. And here he is saying, you know, you've got to come out, and you've got to be visible, and he's asking people to come out.
So how did that make you feel about yourself then?
Well, it was very uncomfortable, obviously. Milk is not a common name, and there's not a lot of people with it, so I would get asked if I was related to him. And luckily, I was big, so I didn't get physical bullying, but certainly had verbal assaults. So I would say to Harvey, I remember at his father's funeral, my grandfather, I said, you know, Harvey, you should not be constantly talking about you being gay. And this is someone that I love, to say this.
Right.
He would, with a hand signal that would kind of put it aside, he would say, I agree with you. And then he would spend the next 2 hours explaining to me why it was important to do that. So he would agree with you to kind of let down your guard and then take you on a journey to convince you that why it was necessary. But from a younger age, he would tell me that, you know, if every LGBT person could turn purple overnight, we would no longer have a struggle, because we would be everywhere. We'd be in every faith organization. We'd be in every economic group. We'd be in every company. We'd be in every community. We'd be in every family. And the lies and the myths and innuendos that are told about LGBT people would be taken down. And that was probably what drove him into politics, because he realized the visibility needs to start there.
When he finally did get elected to the Board of Supervisors, what stands out to you as his single most outstanding achievement?
Sadly, Harvey's conversation and letters to me towards the end of his 11 months in office were about his probable assassination. He let the family know, and me in particular, that he probably was not going to make it to 1979. I was 17, and I started American University that September when he was killed in November. I still hadn't come out, even to Harvey, but I was obviously feeling freer and feeling able to experience my sexuality.
But as you say, that was dampened down by the fact that he communicated to his family that he felt very sure that if somebody was going to try and kill him.
He absolutely was certain that he would not make it to 1979. Ann Cronenberg, who was his campaign manager, is the co-founder of the Milk Foundation. We have saved a lot of the death threats. Most of them were not anonymous. They were actually signed. His message to me was that it's not the time or the amount of time that he was here, but that it's that when he was here, he had done something that would help future generations of LGBT people. That was absolutely his main passion and goal. So believe it or not, I think the thing that he would be most proudest of is not any legislation that he passed and not any speech that he gave, but that simply his assassination would free what he hoped would be the global LGBT community.
That's really interesting that you're not focusing on anything specific while he was in office, but I would like to talk to you about Senator John Briggs' Proposition 6, basically, I guess, would have banned homosexual men and women from teaching in schools or having anything to do with the education department in the state of California. But if that had got through, that would have been devastating to the LGBT community, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it was actually a little bit more intense than you just described. It actually would have banned anyone who supported LGBT people from teaching.
Yes.
You know, he went into all the places with that campaign against the Briggs Initiative of communities who hated him. And so I would get a letter from Harvey, I remember one, where he said, you know, I went in to a room of 1,000 people who hated me, and I left, and, you know, there were 999 people who hated me. And I remember saying to him, calling him after getting, and I said, Harvey, you had one person who you changed their mind. And he said, well, that one becomes two, the two becomes four. the four becomes eight. It's the only way we move forward. And he really thrived on those type of debates. He thought that he could have a debate with the biggest bigots, and at the end of the day, he may not win the bigot over, but he would win people in the audience over.
And I guess that's what happened when it came to the vote.
It did. And even towards the end, there's a film clip that we just showed with the teachers union here in Bristol. It was his last TV appearance. And they said, you know, it looks like the Briggs Initiative will be a big win. And he said, don't be so quick to say that. I think him and Sally Gerhardt, who were the two chairs of the No campaign, they did an amazing job of really letting people know that the myths, the lies, and innuendos about LGBT people, and in particular about LGBT people being pedophiles, which was what Anita Bryant, the orange juice queen, was peddling, was all false and untrue. And at the end of the day, even people like Ronald Reagan came out and said to vote against the Briggs Initiative. So he really did a brilliant job.
Let me take you on to the Harvey Milk Foundation, of which you are co-founder. Could you tell me exactly what the foundation does? What does it stand for?
I had began speaking in 1985 as out and representative of the family. And it was really Desmond Tutu, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who challenged me and Anne, Harvey's campaign manager at the White House, to do more. I was accepting the Presidential Medal of Freedom on behalf of my uncle, and Desmond Tutu had done his research and knew that I was out and that I was doing campaigning for LGBT rights, but really nothing formal with Harvey's name. Kara Kennedy, Ted Kennedy's daughter, was accepting for her father, who was still alive but too sick to come. And so he turned to Kara with me in front of him and complimented her on what she did for President Kennedy and for Senator Robert Kennedy, she was also his niece, with their foundations. And then he turned to me, and with those spectacles and with a finger, he said, and you've got to do more. He said, you know, there's a lot of LGBT people who have been killed, but none have been martyrs. None knew they were going to be killed and put their lives on the line and took those bullets for LGBT people. And he said that there are women discriminated against in many places of the world, but not everywhere. There are people of color discriminated in a lot of the world, but not everywhere. But he said there are LGBT people discriminated everywhere, and Harvey's story can free them. You must take that globally. And so most of our work is done globally, where the situation for LGBT people is like where my uncle had it in the 1970s or worse.
So who do you deal with globally? Is it government organizations, or are you dealing with grassroots people, or does that depend on the nation?
It does depend on the nation. It depends on the cultural competency and the culture. There's a lot of armchair global activists now that do a lot of harm. We won't choose a country to go into unless we've been invited in, and we won't go in unless there's people on the ground there to do it. We don't do anything from afar, so everything we do is on the ground. We've been doing work in plenty of countries where it's illegal to be LGBT, but we will not do anything from afar. We will go there and stand with them. I've had everything in the world thrown at me all over the world. These are brave, primarily young, but brave people all over the world who really have taken on almost a new mantle of being first and being out and being loud and asking for rights. Unfortunately, many of the activists that Anne and I have worked with are no longer alive. They've been killed, like Milan Rosa in Hungary. And so, you know, unfortunately, here in Europe, we don't have to look too far to see regression, movement back on LGBT rights. We must remain vigilant.
To lighten things up a little bit, one of the most proudest things that the foundation that you feel that they have done?
Well, you know, I would say Harvey Milk Day in California. We have a
that's May 22nd on his
May
birthday.
May 22nd. It's we got Arnold Schwarzenegger to sign it. The first year that we got it passed in the state legislature was 2008. Arnold vetoed the bill and turned it down, saying that Harvey was important, but only for San Francisco.
Right.
And then we got the president to do the Medal of Freedom. We had Harvey inducted into the U.S. Hall of Fame. And Sean Penn won Best Academy Award for the movie Milk. So we went back, and this time I solicited the support of Maria Shriver, who is Arnold's wife. And we think she may have deprived Arnold of some evening activities because he signed it on a Sunday at the last minute, and Maria called me and said, it's done, it's signed. And it was late at night, even in California time, so anyway, it's very interesting that a conservative Republican governor would sign the first law anywhere in the world that would have an official state-sanctioned celebration and holiday written into law permanently for a LGBT campaigner.
Finally, Stuart, let me ask you one more question. Well, actually, maybe two. Do you have a penchant for musical theatre? Has that rubbed off on you from your Uncle Harvey?
Well, you know, so when I was 12, I was taken to see Jesus Christ Superstar. And so after I got home, I said, Harvey, I want the play script. And he got it for me. And I said, I want some props. And he got them for me. So I could almost recite every line from Jesus Christ Superstar and went on with other musicals. We did an amateur production in high school. And I wanted to be King Herod, but the director wanted me to be Pontius Pilate. So, but I just loved the whole theater thing. I mean, it just was, you know, and again, it was one of those aha moments for my uncle, the way he looked at me. And then the conversations that we had after seeing how, you know, just enthralled I was with being in the theater and seeing that world.
So the other half of that question was going to be, what is your favorite musical? But I'm going to guess it must be Jesus Christ Superstar in that case.
Yeah, it's tough. I would say that it would be between Jesus Christ Superstar and Evita. You know, I've been to Buenos Aires and I've stood in the Casa Rosada, and of course, like every good card carrying queer person, I stood on the balcony with my hands up and said, "Don't cry for me, Argentina."
And did the thing. Well, with that, Stuart Mill, finally, I'd just like to thank you very much for spending time with me today and telling me about your late uncle and what you've been up to.
Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Bethany Black, and you're listening to Shout Out Radio.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
And then that's a Take That and Get Ready For It.
I didn't know you were a Take That fan, Andy.
Well, I quite like that song, so I'll let you into a little secret. These are all the ones I've been collecting on Shazam. Ooh. You know, like, you know the app where, you know, if you hear something and you're out and about and you just press a button and it recognises it. I was stuck for tracks this week, so I thought I'd have a go through it. So half of these would be from things like adverts and all like that I was listening to, and I was like, oh, I like that. So,
I bet you've got Barbie Girl as well.
No.
Barbie Girl, that takes me back. Yeah.
That was, do you remember the name of the group?
Aqua.
Yeah.
Swedish, no doubt, no less. Yeah.
Yes. And then Swedish they did, popular. Do you remember the song that they did after Aqua? After it, Barbie Girl?
Dr.
Jones.
Yeah, it was.
It was a sort of like thinly disguised sort of riff on Indiana Jones, wasn't it?
Anyway, coming up at the end of the show, we got some very interesting news for you that we'll be talking about. But before then, we need to get the news headlines from across the world.
This is Shoutout News on Thursday, the 26th of May.
Ollie Alexander, the young gay lead singer with pop sensation Years and Years, is no stranger to being a cover star, having appeared on the front of several LGBT magazines over the last year or so. Now he's been interviewed about his worldview in the magazine The New Humanist. In a lengthy spread, Mr. Alexander talks about being a gay ambassador and role model in the pop world and the pressures that fame has brought with it. The New Humanist is the journal of the Rationalist Association, a free-thinking group that advocates scientific and free inquiry and for rational humanist principles in public policy. It's available from larger newsagents throughout the Shoutout region.
Human rights campaigner Peter Tatchell is never one shrinking away from a difficult conversation and has at times both earned us support and criticism from other activists for the position he takes. For example, some weeks ago, he confounded even long-term supporters by saying that, in principle, a bakery run by religious conservatives in Northern Ireland should not be compelled by law to make a cake supporting marriage equality. This week, Peter took aim at both exclusively gay and straight identities alike, with a new essay called The Future is Bisexual. In it, he argues that the liberalisation of sexual desire throughout the Western world will mean that more people will in the future explore the innate bisexuality that he believes characterises all human beings. And this separate identities of heterosexuality and homosexuality will fade away. Peter's essay will doubtless wind up a lot of people, such as sexual conservatives who believe that heterosexuality is always superior. It is also likely to annoy a small subgroup of feminists known as TERFs, who dislike gender and sexual fluidity. Peter's essay is published on his website. Just to do an internet search for Peter Tatchell Foundation to see more.
A campaign group called We Are Europe, which is campaigning for the UK to stay within the European Union, has divided opinion with a street mural in the Stokes Croft area of Bristol depicting Boris Johnson in a passionate kiss with US presidential hopeful Donald Trump. The Bristol Post says that the campaigners are trying to highlight the fact that the UK could end up more closely aligned to the United States if it votes to leave the European Union in the forthcoming referendum. The mural was inspired by a famous piece of street art from Cold War Berlin, which depicted German communist leader Erich Honecker kissing the Soviet Union's President Brezhnev. However, not everyone is impressed by this type of street art. Some people have pointed out online that popular depictions of other world leaders in an opposite sex kiss are rarer than homosexual embraces, and they wonder whether there is an effort to whip up homophobia in a political cause.
KHOUH TV station in Texas reports that Ken Paxton, the state's attorney, will commence impeachment proceedings against President Obama over the issue of allowing trans people access to bathrooms and toilet facilities, congruent with their gender identity. Pink News, meanwhile, says that a number of anti-trans laws forbidding trans women in particular from using an appropriate bathroom are part of the wedge issue to try and tear up recent LGBT gains in areas of equality and to whip up wider anti-transgender prejudice. The Obama administration have intervened to remind states that it is not legal for them to institute discrimination against trans people. Texas disputes this and told local TV that it was Obama's administration that had overstepped the mark. Six other states are pursuing Obama administration.
And finally, thanks to Paul, who has tipped us off of a milestone of note for the many LGBT fans of science fiction. Doctor Who magazine, a publication which debuted in October 1979, marks its 500th issue this week, with a souvenir issue 500 going on sale today. For many gay and trans comic and sci-fi fans, the magazine has been as much a part of essential reading as Gay Times or Trans Living. When it first published, the Fourth Doctor, played by the irrepressible Tom Baker, was incumbent in the role. The new special edition features an exclusive interview with current Doctor, Peter Capaldi, and looks back at the world's longest-standing science fiction show. Gay Trekkies are not far behind, though, with this autumn marking the 50th anniversary of Star Trek first hitting US screens. So remember, resistance is useless.
For further news and stories and more, check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr
and Tara Fraser.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
And did you know 2017 will see Star Trek the series returning to our screens?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, courtesy of CBS.
Will that be the next generation?
No one knows. No one knows. Only the logo has been revealed so far. And they've gone back to the original kind of Star Trek
the 60s writing. Oh, right, that theme tune.
So we're expecting it to fit in with the new era of films, but no one knows. So watch this space.
Fabulous.
So anyway, Ida Hobbit coming up in a minute.
Abbreviation, such a long word.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's Why Don't You? By Gramophone Z.
By who?
Gramophone Z.
Can I make you say that again? Because you really were struggling on that last syllable.
Gramophone Z. There you go. So, yeah.
I
did actually. I had to pre-read that several times to make sure I got that right on air, I have to admit. So, anyway, now Tuesday just gone. Well, last week actually was Ida Hobbit Day, and here in Bristol there was a flag raising went on College Green.
Yes.
In fact, I think they had a purple picnic type thing, didn't they? So,
They raised a couple of flags, didn't they?
Mm, yeah. A younger reporter called Maddie was also there in News Today to kind of, you know, gauge the opportunity of and the opinion of what some of the young people thought. So we'll have a listen to this.
How did you first know about Idaho, or Ida Hobbit? It's got many names.
Last year, I just started at Freedom, and we were introduced to it as International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia.
I found out on Facebook.
I was following a bisexual Tumblr page, and they had a local group posting about Ida Hobbit or whatever it was known back then.
How big do you think online communities and social media have been in spreading word about Ida Hobbit and similar LGBT themed events?
Really, really big. That's how I found out pretty much about everything, like being on the internet. Like when I couldn't get the information from the people that I relied on, I had to look outside of the box, and the internet was so helpful with that stuff. Like it really was.
I think I found out through the web or something. And then last year I took part in an event for Ida Hobbit Day where we spoke to a group of youth and kind of challenged their views on homophobia and transphobia and did some performances and stuff. They were really difficult to engage. They didn't really want to be there, so we had to work really hard. But I think we made a good impact eventually. It just took a while, and I'm really glad that we did it and stuck with it.
So this year, Ida Hobbit's kind of focus as well is mental health. How would you say like the two intersect together?
I think the two are very much intertwined. I think the statistics, something like 49% of trans people think of committing suicide, which is an appalling statistic. I think the mental health and LGBT communities, they just interlink with each other so much because of the discrimination. I think puts LGBTQ plus people under a lot of pressure, and there are a lot of worries that come with the identity of not fitting into the social norm, which can cause a huge range of mental illnesses. And I think that it's really important that people that do identify as LGBTQ plus are supported through that.
I guess with the sense of being LGBT, there's a sense of isolation at the beginning and sort of, you know, perhaps, you know, no one else is like this, or, you know, I still feel a bit isolated now and then. But maybe as generations grow and get older, they understand that there's a community around them and that there are days and events to sort of protect who they are.
Around 10% of young adults will experience like depression and self-harm and things like that. But the numbers for LGB young adults are, I think, 30-35%, and for trans teens it's like up to 50%, which just shows this huge overlap. Like, that's awful. That shouldn't be happening. I don't think it's because they're LGBT or T. I think it's a lot more to the society. The fact that homophobia, transphobia and biphobia are present, I think that's what causes the overlap far, far more than identity.
What do you think about us having a day that's international?
I think it's really important for everywhere in the world to celebrate it, especially all of the countries that it's still illegal to be a gay person. I think it's important that everyone recognises it and has the chance to celebrate and like express who they are.
I think there are about 80 or so countries celebrating Ida Hobbit today, and like Bolivia, where my father's side of the family are from, I think they're celebrating maybe for the first or second time, and there are activists there, and as rights get better over there as well. And it's just nice to know that even if you're sort of, you can be uncomfortable there, like 10 years ago, I think it was still illegal to do a lot of things, and that couples weren't recognised and they couldn't serve in the military. But as the years have gone by, all those things have been given to them. And so I feel that as prominent days like this become worldwide events, it's only better for the LGBT community.
It makes people feel more one. It kind of brings more people together. If you're feeling really alone and you find out that this thing's happening somewhere in the world, that's kind of really comforting. Like, other people do care.
I'm so glad it's an international day. It becomes all too easy to focus on the stigma and discrimination we face here. However, it's a global situation. We're not alone. We can't see ourselves as isolated bodies. There are people all over the world who are experiencing huge discrimination, who are experiencing death penalties or less official death penalties, wherein they're being killed for being who they are. And we need to be talking about that. And to have that day to recognise them and think about them is hugely important.
Ever wondered why the man who invests all your money is called a broker?
Shout out.
LGBT Radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That is Reggie and Bolly, who I'd never heard of. Apparently they were on X Factor last year or something.
Not Reggie. Oh yeah, I remember seeing that.
That's called New Girl. So, hello Mary.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Lovely to see you.
Yeah, and you? I got a story about poppers for you.
Have you?
Yeah.
I know a song about that, I won't sing it now.
But this will make you laugh. You know, today is like the first day that new psychoactive substances Act comes
the thing
into
about
force,
legal highs, or I guess the substances previously known as legal highs.
Yeah. Well, you know, like there's been a whole lot. If you are listening and you aren't aware, Poppers is not included in the ban.
It was initially going to be, though, wasn't it?
They never wanted it to be. It's just the government kind of interpreted it as that because they didn't want it to. But then the actual people who decided what was and wasn't came out and categorically said it didn't meet the requirements to be banned.
Okay.
Which was interesting. So, what's really funny is obviously it's the first day, and we shouldn't laugh, but bless them. Crawley police got it a little bit wrong. When they went into the shop and seized all the poppers.
All the room odorizers.
No, you can call them poppers now, because, of course, they're now legal.
Yeah, alkyl nitrate.
This is the whole thing. So, and then they tweeted, first day, first seizure in Crawley by PC Gota. One and only one warning given. Hashtag no second chance. Hashtag poppers included.
How could they not know that it wasn't...
It didn't take long before people were going, so is the officer that confiscated these has no jurisdiction to do so? Wouldn't that be classed as theft? Are they not aware? Have they not read the bill? Blah, blah, blah. And went on and on and on, with the police even coming back and saying, it is illegal from today to sell poppers. You must not sell poppers. It's now illegal. Then eventually, about an hour later, someone went and checked. And a tweet went out and said, we are checking out the situation regarding the illegality of selling poppers and we'll update shortly, Crawley Police. All of a sudden, all the tweets disappeared that they'd been posting. And then they said, Crawley Police can announce that the poppers were seized in error in good faith. All goods will be returned to the shop with apologies.
Ooh, hang on. Are they liable here for loss of sales?
Well, technically, they basically went into a shop and stole.
Shoplifting.
Well, I don't quite know how that works.
For personal use?
Incorrectly seized the goods, which means if the shop could prove that they would have sold the entire stock in that time it was seized, then the police could be liable for that.
So anyway, if you are someone who partakes of amyl nitrate as a room odorizer or whatever else, you may be pleased to hear that it is not included in the Psychoactive Substances Act. There we go. God, dear, they could have got it something easier, couldn't they?
No, it's very factually correct.
True, yeah. So, it's a breaking news story that literally happened at about 5 o'clock this afternoon.
All right, police don't know the law in Crawley.
No, yeah. So let's hope Bristol don't do that and get that one wrong.
Their LGBT liaison officer's going to be busy.
I think after this news story, no other force will get it wrong.
True.
No. I'm sure they had they were trying to do the right thing, but it's very interesting that the first thing they did was go out and target a shop that sells poppers.
Well, I guess it would be quite easy, wouldn't it? Someone would have known that shop was selling that previously and had their eye on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone might have gone, go there.
I don't know. Anyway, I just thought you worked like that as a bit of an end of show, because it is quite funny. So, that's it for another 7 days. Do check out our website for all the info.
Just head over to shoutoutradio.lgbt, where you find it all and a lot more.
Talking of 7 days, we'll be back in another 7 days with another show just for you. But from myself, Mary, Tara, Natalie, Terry and the rest of the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.